Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? We welcome you into the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here with you, joined alongside Full House. Once again, we got the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin back in the building. What's up, man?
I'm here. I'm happy to be here. I had my family was here for like a week, so it was great to see them, and now I'm ready to get back to normal life.
To the grind.
I still have a lot of pieces to pick up. I got to do a lot of laundry and clean stuff and all that jazz, so that's going to be fun trickling into the next couple days.
We've got the franchise here as well, Matt Franciscovich. What's up, man? How you doing?
Yo, I'm good.
Yeah?
Still kind of comprehending what happened yesterday in that Vikings game.
Oh, boy.
It was wild.
We're going to get to those games.
Yeah.
We'll get to both the games we saw on Sunday. I didn't put anything from Saturday's games in because, quite frankly, they were both kind of...
What?
No, the Eagles-Falcons game was good.
That game was awesome.
Eagles-Falcons, okay. All right.
We can forget that the other game
happened. Matt Harmon here as well. What's up, man?
Oh, hell yeah. It's a great weekend of football. I had so much fun watching all those games. It was awesome. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I thought we're starting off a little like...
A little low?
A little low. You guys are all low right now.
That's
I'm high.
True. Okay.
I'm
no,
high.
That's true. Okay, you know
great.
What? Fair. Fair.
Well, can I just throw this out there? I put this out there on Twitter.com yesterday, but was this the best opening two rounds of the playoffs in NFL history? Because you can make a case that 7 of the 8 games were phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like late lead changes, close, high drama plays, big plays. I think you can make a case that this is one of the best opening first two rounds of the playoffs in NFL history.
I mean, we certainly saw a play we've never seen before in Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, that's an all-timer.
Well, no, it really is. There's literally never been a walk-off
fourth quarter postseason touchdown.
Yeah, walk-off postseason touchdown.
Oh, no, no, no.
Zero seconds on the clock.
Exactly. So you've never seen that play in NFL history. So, yeah, certainly a case could be made. Producer Chris, we didn't even get your take. What's up, pal? How you doing?
What's up, guys? Unbelievable. Sunday was unbelievable. I'm sorry, franchise, for the Steelers loss.
Sorry.
We talked about it on a Thursday. But, hey, we're in an upgraded conference room, by the way.
Yeah,
too.
Not a closet.
The guarantee is a little bit bigger than the closet.
Yes.
We've got some nice glass windows. These are real nice chairs we're sitting in, too.
I think when people imagine –
Should we close that door?
Yeah, we should close that door.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is it open?
The door's open. I think when people imagine, like, conference room at the NFL Network, this is probably what they actually imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Not the one we're normally in.
There are four big screen TVs. Like, what do we think these are? 70 inches? Not quite?
No.
60-something?
I didn't even notice.
69?
Wow. Yeah.
They're 69 inches.
These chairs are outrageous.
I wish I had one of these on my desk.
So nice! These are so, for just a rolling desk chair, these are unbelievably
The ones we have in the newsroom are, like, falling apart.
This may be a two-hour podcast today.
Mine is literally teetering back and forth. I'm just wondering, like... Will it make it to the Super Bowl?
It's supposed to have four wheels and only has three, so you're trying to like lean to one side the whole time.
If you ever thought that working at NFL Media was this super glamorous, you know, like you're gonna get golden caviar served on, you know, it's nope.
No. I'm punching people just to get some almonds from the break room.
Right? I'm saying it's like a pack of wolves when the snacks get dropped over there.
It is. The cubicle life at NFL Media is for reals.
Only in the newsroom, though, because in other areas, like, those snacks will be there till, like, the next day.
Oh, yeah. The newsroom is crazy.
They're gone in 10 minutes. Well, it's because we're treated like animals there that we have become like animals.
Well, there's the most people and the smallest, like, snacks. The water fountain, like, runs out sometimes.
Oh, that's the worst.
The water does
run out.
On a consistent basis.
We go dry at noon in mid-season.
We go dry
at
noon.
Get water now. It's running low.
Yeah, better start rationing.
The stream is low pressure.
Oh, man.
It's bad.
Oh, man.
What a nice tangent that was.
But to your point, I don't know about, like, best in NFL history because I don't know who the hell knows, but, like, it's been an unbelievable set of postseason games.
So much fun.
Like, the wild card games were great.
Right.
The divisional round did not disappoint. It's always supposed to be the best weekend of football. And we've got, like, the games next weekend. We have three great stories and then the Evil Empire. And it's a great set of, like, I think whoever comes out winning this, and even, you know, I guess in some ways I could humanize the Patriots and be like, wow, what an incredible thing to see them win another Super Bowl. Well, there's just so much greatness. I know I don't want it either, but I'm just saying, like, And no matter
you have to respect it.
No matter who like wins
the
Super Bowl.
They got another easy draw. They got to beat your Steelers because Antonio Brown busted up his calf. Then they get the Titans, who didn't even deserve to be in the playoffs.
Right. But it's still impressive. Okay.
I'm over it. I'm over
Brady's
them.
40
I'm over
years
it
old.
Too. But so three
cancel the Patriots, save football.
I'm over it too, but you can't dismiss them.
But three out of the four outcomes that we could have would be unbelievable.
Yes.
Great stories.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so
except that one, you know.
Like for the Pats
option is heavily weighted.
Yeah, for the Pats it just feels like another notch on the belt.
I don't agree with that
like,
at all. All right. I do not agree
with
that.
We'll get to it when we get to it. But let's get back to these games that we saw on Sunday. I mean, I feel bad for Marcus Williams, the safety there for the New Orleans Saints, but he's going to go down in football infamy, man. It's, in my mind, the worst defensive play in NFL history. Completely whiffing on that Stephon Diggs tackle. People got into my mentions about, is this worse? You're forgetting about Raheem Moore in Denver when he just, who the hell knows what he was doing against Baltimore. But the reason I say this is the worst is because he was actually trying to make the right play, but just, God, I mean, what happened? Just completely the Raheem Moore example, he was going for the ball, right? And he didn't make the right play. He didn't make the right decision, which was, hey, any caught ball on attack, the game's over. The only thing you can't give up is a touchdown. But Raheem Moore's making a play on the ball. Marcus Williams was...
I think actually Raheem Moore's might be worse because as the safety,
I think so
your
too.
One job is don't let anybody get behind you. Marcus Williams didn't let Stephon Diggs get behind him until he totally whiffed the tackle. Raheem Moore made more of like a selfish play and blew everything up for
Marcus
them.
Marcus Williams knew the situation.
Yeah.
And he did not execute on the situation.
In terms of what it felt like, I posted on Instagram that I was actually reflecting on that Ravens game last night. And like, this one felt worse. Maybe it's recency bias or whatever, but just the way it happened, like, because not only does he miss the tackle or just
he takes
miss,
out his guy.
He misses everything. And then it's just like, oh, Diggs is going. Oh, he's still going. He's just scored a touchdown. Like, and just to walk off like that regulation.
But you realize that Marcus Williams took out his own guy.
Yeah, no.
The one guy that could have made the play.
It was rough.
Oh, that guy didn't have a prayer of catching Diggs.
He was a yard behind
it.
And
he was
Diggs,
more than a yard behind
Well,
him.
Hold up. He was a yard behind, and Diggs was stumbling when he first caught the ball. If that guy's running at full steam, he's catching him.
I don't think he catches Diggs.
Oh, man.
I really don't think he catches Diggs.
I was ready for Diggs to go out of bounds and them kick a field goal. And he
Either
kept
way.
Running, and I was like, "He's still going!" Like,
it's
what?
Yeah, it was
I was like, I couldn't believe it.
Neither could Diggs or Keenan. Both of them said that, like in the locker room, post game interviews. Both of them were like, "I don't know what just like." I think Diggs said to Keenan when they were hugging in the locker room, like, I don't know what just happened. He's like, I don't know either.
Yeah.
They were blown away.
Yeah. Keenan's reaction was great.
Why this one might have in the moment viscerally felt worse too is Jacoby Jones has only tied it. In that game against Baltimore, they had to go to overtime, and then
that's what I'm saying. That's because he just
that's right.
It was over.
But
it
then
was
it,
over.
Then it's also
that.
I think the Ravens got the first possession in that game, kicked a field goal, and was over. Oh no, they couldn't have because that was probably after the rule was changed.
All right, so in the NFC Championship game, Eagles taking on the Vikings. It's Case Keenum versus Nick Foles.
Two Jeff Fisher quarterbacks.
Jeff Fisher quarterbacks.
And their numbers are 7-9.
That's true.
SB Nation tweeted out a photo of them side by side. Case Keenum 7 and Nick Foles is 9.
It's pretty amazing. That's pretty gorgeous.
This is amazing. All right, so who do you guys got? Eagles, Vikings?
Vikings, baby.
Vikings?
Vikes.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the Vikings, but
I want to see them get home field in the Super Bowl.
That would
so
be hilarious.
Bad.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be awesome.
And then hear Patriots fans just crow about, "Ooh, it's a disadvantage for us the whole 2 weeks
putting
prior.
The Patriots in over the Jags."
Did you not hear the Jalen Ramsey last night?
It's going to happen.
They go in the Super Bowl and then they're going to win that B.
I'm not putting them in, but if they get
you just
in, that's what they'll be.
I will put them in.
Oh, you're disgusting.
I'm not. It's just that's the – But – I think that's the right call.
Well,
someone else pointed out this Jags defense is like a Tom Coughlin product.
Oh, I see. The Tom Coughlin proxy.
And
okay.
Who beat the Patriots twice in the Super Bowl?
Tom Coughlin
defenses.
Well, I just think, look, all three of these defenses are incredible. They're left in the playoffs, except New England's, obviously.
Right.
Like, any of them, I think, can match up well with the Patriots. You've got – I think you could stick Jalen Ramsey on Gronkowski and then have Boye take out outside receivers. And then there's a lot that
they're
they
just
can,
not that creative, though. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, they could do that. They could do a lot of those things. They have the personnel to do whatever the hell they want to do.
Right.
But they're not creative enough to do
it. Well, I don't think that it's fair to say that they're not creative. They haven't had to be at any point this year. They've been able to do, like, what Seattle
– That's what I'm saying. So now we're going 18, 19 weeks. It's not going to happen. They're going to play their base defense, man.
I think the Steelers exposed the Jags secondary yesterday a little bit. Like,
really? Do you think they exposed them when they had
Threw four touchdown passes.
Unlike in most of them were in tight coverage and came from spectacular plays from the best wide receiver in football.
But they still got beat.
The Patriots don't have the best wide receiver in football.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's I don't. You think Brandon Cooks is going to make those plays on Ramsey and Boye?
He can burn anyone.
Nah, not these.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, again, like yeah,
I was more a testament to Brown being an amazing player. Yeah,
well, no one else makes that catch.
Yeah,
Le'Veon Bell. Holy hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bell. I mean, Bell's coverage or touchdown catch came in tight coverage
right,
too.
Like the reason the Steelers were in that game is because they have two of the best players at their position. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I love Deion Lewis.
Three. I mean, even the way Roethlisberger's been playing right now.
But as shut down as a Jags secondary has been, the Steelers exposed them a little bit in that game.
I wouldn't use the word exposed, but obviously they did get over
they got beat.
A little bit.
They got beat.
Guys, I had a question for you. From a team-building perspective, we look at the four quarterbacks in this Final Four, right?
Yeah.
You have Foles, and I know Wentz was a big part of why they're there.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Blake Bortles, Case Keenum, undrafted, and obviously Tom Brady. From a team-building perspective, do you pay Kirk Cousins $30 million looking at how these teams are built and the depth and the defense?
Yes.
I think Kirk Cousins' value took a little bit of a hit yesterday, in my opinion.
Oh, that's interesting. That's
interesting
an interesting
point.
Thought. I wouldn't if you're asking me, I would not, although if you're one of those teams that are very look, having a good quarterback is a shortcut to victories, right? Otherwise, you've got to build really from the ground up foundationally and draft well. But if you look at what these three remaining teams other than the Patriots have done, and even the Patriots really to a degree, it's just you've got to build defense and you've got to build good a good core, whether it's going to be running backs, whether it's going to be wide receivers. In Minnesota's case, it's a little mix of both, right? So they have a very well-balanced team, does Minnesota, and it really starts with the defense. Philadelphia as well. You look at their defensive line. Mm-hmm. It's again, they've built it from the defense moving forward, but they've added all of those other pieces as well.
You're working with what I would say is like a razor-thin margin of error if you want to go down that line. And you also got to kind of catch lightning in the bottle too. Like if you look at Case Keenum, you know, that is the definition of catching lightning in a bottle. I mean, I've always liked Case Keenum as a player, but he's playing out of his mind right now. He's playing with a great supporting cast, which, as you say, drafting well. Thielen's an undrafted free agent. Diggs is like a fifth-round pick. McKinn was a third-round pick, something like that. Murray kind of just a whatever free agent. And their offensive line has mostly been built from like mid-tier free agents. So they've kind of just had it all come together in the right moment. And hope maybe it's a sustainable thing. Who knows? But because you can look at one of the teams that's probably going to chase after Kirk Cousins is the Broncos. They kind of took that approach where – they drafted a first-round player, but they started the year with Trevor Siemian kind of thinking like, okay, maybe he can be that guy with a good defense and a good run game. Both those two things kind of came to fruition, and he's still pissed in his pants and ruined the Broncos season. So you can look at it in multiple different ways.
All right, let's take a step back here, all right? So obviously it was a brutal loss for the Steelers at home against a Jags team that I put in this rundown. Look, you can criticize me if you want, but the Jags came in with the Jeff Fisher game plan, and they won. It was very simplistic, but they imposed their will. I mean, that's literally what it comes down to. They were able to impose their will, but their game plan, extraordinarily simplistic. The Jags just did what they do. But a brutal home loss, I think, for the Steelers. And since we have a Steelers fan in the house, what were your thoughts and emotions while watching this game and all?
Well, I sunk into a deep, dark hole of depression when Steelers went down
21-0.
But, like, they couldn't stop Leonard Fournette in the first half.
The run game at all.
It was like they're going to give it to Fournette, and he just kept eating huge chunks of yard. He had that big touchdown run. Like, the Steelers didn't show up. I said ahead of this game that my only real fear was the fact that the Steelers starters had 2 weeks off, basically. They didn't start their starters in week 17.
And they were looking forward towards that Patriots game as well.
Yeah, and they had the bye. They were looking forward. Like, Lev Bell was chirping on Twitter the night
about
before.
About retirement. What?
No, he was chirping about loving round twos.
Round two.
He was going to have another one in the championship round.
Right. Like, they were just, like, already banking a win against the
Mike
Jaguars.
Mitchell, too.
Yeah.
Mitchell.
And they came out in the first quarter, and they looked – They looked like they didn't care.
Yeah, they look flat.
They looked like they didn't care.
It was like peak Steelers BS going into this game. Like, overconfidence by players like Bell and Mitchell, like, already looking forward to round two. Give me a break, you goofballs. Number two, like, there's reports of Bell threatening to retire if he gets franchised. There's reports of Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger not getting along. So it's the two things that make the Steelers just one of the more insufferable franchises in the league.
Insufferable!
And I mean it. It's so annoying. It's been this way for years. Like, it's either just poor overconfidence that gets them beat by teams they should win against, or it's infighting and stupid drama, and that's just consistent themes of the Tomlin era Steelers.
Man,
and both of them came to fruition coming into this game. Pittsburgh deserved to lose that game.
Their defense
deserved to lose
terrible.
It 10 times out of 10.
We had talked about on NFL Pick'em that the only way the Steelers were going to win this game is Ben Roethlisberger had to protect that ball like his life depended on it.
You did say that,
and he did not do that. The two turnovers that he had ultimately cost the Steelers the victory. I mean, you know, a sack. And again, I get that the great plays that he made were because he was hanging in the pocket. But, I mean, that interception was not great. And clearly the sack fumble for a touchdown was just off.
And there were some really questionable play calls on those 2 fourth-and-ones that they didn't get.
Nothing
and then
boils my blood faster than a pitch.
What are you guys doing?
Your quarterback's nickname is Big Ben. Just run it up the middle with him. Sneak
exactly.
it. Let him dive forward for the half yard you needed.
I wonder how much of that is Haley or Ben Roethlisberger changing the plays at the line. Either way, whichever one it was.
Yeah, but
why
still
pitch it out?
And especially against the defense that fast, too. Like, I hate the play call in general.
Penetrating defense.
Linebackers that can fly to the ball all over the place and attacking quarterbacks. Like, what are you thinking?
And then at the end, and I know it was still a long shot, but they decided to onsides kick it.
Yeah. I know.
I was like,
what are you guys doing?
I think they had a couple timeouts. I don't exactly remember how much time was left on
the
clock.
They botched the time management, too, because they let like 15 seconds run off before the 2-minute warning.
Yes.
Tomlin is a liability in big moments like that. This is not like a new thing. This is another consistent theme of the Tomlin era Steelers. And your point on the turnovers too, James, is like when they happened is important too, because I think this Jags team is a team that feeds off its own arrogance and confidence, kind of like the 2015 Panthers a little bit. Like, they are meant to play as front runners. Like, and when Jacksonville could get that big lead and then keep whooping you on offense, that makes a big difference. So Roethlisberger coming out, obviously he played a fantastic game overall, but the timing of those turnovers when they happened allowed the Jags to feed into their own confidence. And even Blake was feeling it at one point.
It's
like, so, you know, that's the type of thing that when they go into New England next week, if they're able to make a couple big plays early, that's when I think you got to look out for.
All right, so a couple of news items here for the Steelers, right? NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport says the Steelers are expected to franchise Le'Veon Bell again. He'd make about $15 million next year if that were to be the case. This after Le'Veon Bell said he might just retire or sit out the entire year if he's franchised again. So clearly some drama there.
Yeah, right. He's not going to retire.
Get out. $15 million? No, he's not going to retire. Get out of here. Big Ben also said post-game, told reporters that he does expect to play in 2018, which is a bit of a contrast to what the feeling was
last year,
2017.
Yeah, he was saying he might retire
exactly
last year.
Right. That's
something
exactly
tells
right.
me this is not the last we've heard
it is
of
not.
Big Ben in regards to his retirement and whether or not he's going to play
in
2018.
It will not be. No, it will not be the last.
As a Steelers fan, like, if Lev Bell goes to a different team or something, like, this might have been the last game
the
we'll
last
see
wrong.
If
the Killer Bees.
The Killer Bees all together, and they couldn't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So.
Before we move on from this game in general, too, I do want to give Bortles credit. We were talking about downstairs. He made a lot of clutch throws, I mean, despite your Jeff Fisher game plan attacks, which could be true. I loved their first drive. But from Mike Sando at ESPN, on 3rd and 5+, Bortles went 4 of 6 for 76 yards with 4 first downs, 109 passer rating.
I mean, and some of those throws, too – it's like
we're on the money. They were good.
Yeah. They were good. There was a couple where you're like, "What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?" And then it's like, "Oh, okay, he made it."
definitely threw some wobblers, some ugly looking balls
on third, though. Is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? It's like, "Oh my god, I can't believe you got away with that," but they did. So there you go. All right, so I'll throw it out to you guys. Let's break down this game coming up, okay? Do Fournette and the Jags have a chance versus the Patriots?
Absolutely.
Of course they have a chance. How can you say they don't have any chance?
Definitely have a chance.
Wow. The confidence in the Jaguars.
I think we all want that.
What it is?
No. It's definitely wanting.
But how can you say that what it is? How can you say they have no chance?
With that pass rush, you have a chance.
These are the team like this. That pass rush, that secondary, the coverage players they have all over the place. Like this is the exact type of team that gives the Patriots trouble. I mean, think about when they went into Denver, and then this being in New England is definitely going to be an advantage. But nevertheless, like think about that when they went into Denver a couple of years ago when Denver won a Super Bowl, and when Peyton Manning's throwing ducks on the other side of the ball, and they still outmatched the Patriots did the Denver Broncos. I think the same thing can certainly happen here. They 100% have a chance to win this game.
This is the perfect type of team that has had success in defeating Tom Brady throughout his entire career. You get a lot of pressure on him. You knock him around. He's on the sideline yelling at Josh McDaniels. Meanwhile, Blake Bortles is just putting the ball in Leonard Fournette's stomach. Yeah. You know what? You put Fournette's jersey on Brandon Jacobs back with the Giants teams that beat him in the Super Bowl. It's the same stuff.
That front seven shut down Derrick Henry the other night, but Leonard Fournette and Derrick Henry, like, different players when they start to get going.
Hopefully Fournette's ankle is – I don't think he was the same guy in the second half
he looked – yeah, he was
well, and he wasn't as explosive.
Tennessee, as you have in the rundown, lost Jack Conklin, too, which was a big loss.
Oh, yeah, that was a blow.
Was huge. By the way, that AFC Championship game 2 years ago, Brady was hit, like, 22 times. Yeah. In that game.
That's what the Jags need to do.
That's the recipe.
Von Miller was basically just cruising in a lazy boy in the Patriots backfield there. Like the snap would be made and he was in there.
Malik Jackson was with on that Denver team too. Now he's with the Jags.
Calais Campbell there, obviously, you know, double digit sack totals as well. So
Ngakoue, all these guys, how could you say there's no chance?
I understand, but that being said, it's like, look, man, this is a team that the Patriots are that they're going to get the ball out quick. I think they've learned from their past mistakes as well. I don't see how the Jaguars. And here's the thing, man. I get the Patriots aren't great defensively, but they have been so much improved over the last 6 weeks.
They've gotten better.
And their front seven, as you mentioned, has been able to stop the run pretty well. I get that the Jags are a totally different run style team too. You know what I mean? So. They're going to be able to put post rushing numbers up there. But again, it goes back to if they don't get turnovers, what happens? If they don't have a lead, what happens? And I think those two things favor heavily on the Patriots side. And actually, I guess I'm just surprised that
I'm surprised you're not even giving them a chance, though. Here's the thing:
I've given them nothing.
The Patriots don't have receivers that are going to beat the Jags secondary.
They just
don't. Like Hogan and Cooks are good players, but
100%.
They're not going to be the guys racking up 100 yards. So where this game is going to come down to is Gronk and the running backs and the Jags. If they do, that's how they win, though. But no, if they scheme something like you said, put Ramsey on Gronk, and also the Jags linebackers are so fast and are good coverage linebackers that the Patriots dink and dunk, they're probably not going to be able to get as much yak as they normally do because that Jags defense crashes to the ball so quickly and so ferociously. So you might see 3 3-yard passes and then a 3-and-out for the Patriots.
I don't know, man. I'm surprised. I think the Patriots will be heavily favored in this game, and I think those are the reasons why. All right. Let's get to some coaching news, shall we? Rap Sheet says the Titans are now – or they offered Mike Mularkey – a contract extension. Then we find out earlier this morning he just got fired.
Excuse me. They mutually agreed to part ways.
Okay. He got fired.
Yeah.
So now, all of a sudden, Josh McDaniels is in the running to land the Titans head coaching gig. This 24 hours after Rap Sheet said that they were going to – the Colts were going to offer Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels their head coaching gig. So – obviously, McDaniel's in high demand. There's a lot of things going on in Tennessee.
Sounds like both the Patriots will lose both coordinators, too.
It does sound like that. Adam Schefter says the Lions are expected to hire.
Oh, that is on the rundown.
Patriots defensive coordinator Matt Patricia, who was also linked to the New York Giants. job as well?
If you're McDaniels, you want the Colts job, you want the Titans job?
That's a great question. Because if it's Luck, if Luck's in peak form, if he's healthy, then I think it's a Colts job pretty convincingly. But who the hell knows?
Nobody knows.
I don't know. I think the Tennessee job is a good one. And I do wonder, like,
I think the Tennessee job's a better job.
I like Tennessee.
You've got a deeper core that. You've got a good offensive line. Too. You've got Corey Davis, Rashard Matthews, Delanie Walker for a little bit still.
Yeah, I guess.
Derrick Henry.
What do you have in Indy? These
though?
Are all
you
pretty
have Luck. That's it.
Yeah, you have a
35-year-old Frank Gore.
A potentially
you may not
again,
have Luck either.
Yeah. Well, again, speculating that he's in peak form, which is again big speculation.
Right.
That's why I think it's a Colts job, because I would take one transformative franchise quarterback over all those fine players that you just listed on Tennessee. Like, none of those guys are elite players or even top 10 options.
No, McDaniels hasn't needed elite players all around him.
That's interesting.
You don't think Mariota
That's
can
what I was
be?
Just about to say. Mariota.
No.
He's 24.
Really?
He's 24
I mean, he
years
might
old.
Be, but you have you. That is a complete guess after what we saw this year.
True.
I just think it was a nightmare this
they
season.
They were a bad 9-7 team that I don't think really maximize their talent?
Not at all.
No.
You know?
It's a good way to put it.
I mean,
no.
But again, we're talking about a guy coming off of a broken leg in the offseason in Marcus Mariota. I think he's got tons of upside.
Yeah.
I guess.
He's
I don't
still
know.
Really young.
And again, to what Alex said is I just love their offensive line. They have a pretty good defense there as well. Man, they got a lot of pieces there. I think the wide receiver core obviously needs to be rehauled, but they've got an interesting young player there in Corey Davis as well. So, I don't know,
but,
man.
But
I'm kind of interested.
I get Harmon's point, too, because we've seen Luck drag this team to great lengths already. So, if you put an offensive mind like McDaniels with him, he can go get some players he wants in the draft to fit his system.
You know, you know what we haven't talked about is the GM fit. You know what I mean? Because I think previously – I don't think McDaniels would have touched the Colts given their GM situation, but I don't know, maybe I like
Ballard there now.
No, that's what I'm saying. Maybe he likes Ballard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And
it's not
they
Ryan
feel
Grigson.
That's maybe he feels like he can truly build something there in Indianapolis. I don't know.
The Titans situation though is fascinating. I do think I wonder, what the whole process was that unfolded the last couple of days with Mularkey. Because I think, if you were going to go into Wild Card Weekend thinking, if we lose this game, we're going to fire Mularkey, nothing has happened since that morning to change your opinion.
Right. That's
You got to win in Kansas City playing a style that is not conducive to how you normally play with Mike Mularkey, and then you got whooped by the Patriots. It made no sense to keep him, so that's good. But I do think Josh McDaniels is a big reason why they probably decided to flip the switch with the fact they wanted him. They think they have a good shot to land him because their front office has Patriots connections, and then when they saw him potentially locking in on a division rival team, they ripped the cord on Mularkey. So it's a good decision by Tennessee, and whether they get
I think
McDaniels.
They got lucky, man. I mean, you know what I mean? Because they were going to try – I mean, again, multiple reports are saying Tom Pelissero, reiterating the rap sheet report that they did indeed offer him a contract extension, but something fell apart and they couldn't –
Or they could have looked at the mentions on those tweets.
Oh, my God. The mentions
were molten lava.
Oh, my God. They were flames.
I think
when Rapshi tweeted that out, that they were going to give him the contract extension, the entire timeline of the mentions, man, in those replies, it was just all, I'm over this team. Yeah. Mularkey's horrible. I've given up on the Titans. It was awesome.
I think,
it was crazy.
I think the way it works there, too, is I don't think the front office ever want – because if you remember back a couple of years ago when they hired Mike Mularkey, they whispered it in during a playoff game.
During the peak of that Packers-Cardinals game, I think you and I were on that playoff game with the Jeff Janis catches up. It was like a commercial, and you and I just happened to be on Twitter, and you're like, was that Mularkey? Was this Chaps? Is this real life?
Great game we got going on here. By the way, we hired Mike Mularkey. I think it was the way we described it on the podcast.
Even the vote of confidence last week was not really that great of a vote of confidence.
But if you remember that when they hired him, I think it was the ownership there, Amy Strunk, Amy Strunk, Amy Adam Strunk, whatever.
Right.
She really liked Mike Mularkey and felt really comfortable with him and all
and
that
kind
of
shoehorned
stuff.
Him in.
And kind of shoehorned him in, but I don't think the front office and, again, those Patriots guys, John Robinson, I don't think they ever wanted Mike Mularkey. So I think they finally pushed ownership over the edge in the last couple – maybe just in the last 24 – like 12 hours, really, and finally got him out the door.
That's funny, man.
Rap Sheet is – speculating he could join Hugh Jackson.
Hugh Jackson, yes,
in Cleveland as the offensive coordinator.
I'm so sorry, Cleveland.
I saw Evan Silva quote tweet that and just say, "Great fit."
Oh my god,
just hilarious.
So unbelievable, man. All right, let's talk about playoff challenge a little bit, shall we? All right, so we got Jacksonville taking on New England in Foxborough, and we have Minnesota going to Philadelphia. It's the 1 and 2 seeds there in the NFC, and the NFC playoffs have not disappointed, man. Holy hell, every game has been fantastic.
We figured, looking at the lineup and the slate of teams for weeks ahead of time, you know, once the Rams, Vikings, and Eagles and stuff had been locked and the Saints and Panthers were going to make it, like, this was going to be a good thing, and
I mean, you
every
were, it was just, you were rolling a six-sided die and saying, okay, these are the teams. You know what I'm saying? It was just so many great storylines going in. You could make a case for any of those teams, any six of those teams that got in, you could make a case for them making it to the Super Bowl. But here we are. We got the
man,
one.
What do you guys think about if Carson Wentz was on the Eagles right now? I feel like they'd just be blowing through
NFC
and the Super Bowl.
I mean,
how awesome, how well-rounded that team is, how many different
weapons
they have on offense.
I agree with that. 100%.
Which, again, just has to feel so painful for Eagles fans. I mean, I was watching – I really enjoyed that game on Saturday.
I loved that game. That game was very fun.
I mean, it's awesome that nobody really gave the Eagles a chance in that game and they ended up winning.
Also, I have nightmare fuel forever of who was it that put the dog mask on?
Oh,
Lane
Johnson. Yeah. Lane
Johnson.
I think Chris Long had it on too.
Yeah. That was creepy.
I loved it. I was having a lot of fun with that. I picked the Eagles to win that game. I felt glad. I was glad that they won and whatever. Yeah. Check my Twitter.
Check the Twitters.
But you wrote an article about – you got a lot
Eagles?
Of heat.
I got a lot of heat because.
Oh, is it your Eagles now?
No.
Because you did did you do strength?
Because I did the. I put a piece out for like the once using PFF data, like what's the one surprising thing you wouldn't know about each team.
Yeah.
And I really didn't realize that I had done this, but like all seven of the teams were like a pretty positive note.
Yeah.
Except the Eagles. I wrote something negative for them. And. Heard it for days for Eagles fans.
I see.
And that was what I kept saying to them. I was like, I think I'm going to pick the Eagles to win this game. I think their front seven is enough, and I don't really believe in the Falcons like other people do. But whatever. So I was watching that game or whatever, and I just had to think for all those people that hate me. I just had to think how painful this has to be to watch this team like just – eke out a win versus a team that they're clearly 100 times better than the Falcons with, like, God, if they just had their quarterback, they'd be dropping it.
That would have looked like the Patriots-Titans score if Carson Wentz was healthy.
I think you're right.
Pretty sure Corey Clement led the Eagles in receiving, which is
– Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't look at the box score, but –
Look at the numbers,
I know. I'm sorry. I did not look at the numbers.
So five for five for 31. Well, five for five for 31 yards. He didn't have more yards, but he led the team in catches.
All right, so here we go. We got four teams left, playoff challenge. Who do you guys fill out your rosters with? I had to completely revamp mine because I was so heavily invested in the Steelers and especially the Saints. I had so many Saints in my playoff challenge roster.
Wrong.
I was just so wrong.
I lost out on the Rams in round one. And the Chiefs, and now I lost out on the Saints in round two, so I'm out of it. Who gives a damn what I think?
That's why it's important in this to pick your two favorites for the Super Bowl and stick with them.
And really write it out. Yeah.
Two teams that aren't playing in the wild card round because you get the bonus in round two.
Well,
and
I lost on
the Steelers.
Going to make a run. Like if you loaded up with Jags right now,
you're
sitting pretty.
But I mean, who has any Jags?
I was
going to
say
challenge lineup right now.
I didn't even know how you're sitting pretty because like who did you pick?
Let's say you had Fournette.
If you had Fournette,
oh my God, Fournette's killing
touchdowns yesterday.
Yeah, that's Fournette and Tommy Bohannon.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, but other than Fournette, who are you putting in there?
I mean, even if you had Marquise Lee, he was, like, in and out of the game.
Oh,
and
he clanking passes off his hands like it's 2014.
I guess you're right.
I will say.
Other than Fournette,
there's nobody.
No. There was no one.
Jags defense.
Jags defense. That's true. They scored a touchdown.
On the overall leaderboard right now, the person that is the highest had a roster that was loaded from the opening week with the Steelers, Jags. He had two Saints. He had Lutz and Michael Thomas, so that worked out well.
Yeah.
And Gronk. But so his lineup last week, I mean, he's going to have to switch it up a lot, was Big Ben, 70 points. Left Bell, 52. Leonard Amazing. Fournette, 58. Yeah. Michael Thomas, 40. Antonio Brown, 50. Gronk, 28. Lutz, 12.
Yeah, I mean, if you had the Steelers, like, they gave you a pretty good parting gift.
Yes. Yes.
With the two-time bonuses.
Yeah.
All the production that they put up.
Sure,
but
sure.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I kind of tried to go with, like, a different strategy where I picked a little bit from, like, players I thought I'd have people. Did not work. Has not worked. So I don't think I'll be I'll be getting a Super Bowl trip.
Do you have anyone left from your original starting lineup?
Yes, I had Brady and Gronk and the Vikings defense.
Wow. There you go.
So,
okay, so you get three times
bonus. You get three times
them.
Bonus for them.
That's good.
I've got to fill, like, so many other spots. I got to fill a running back, both receivers.
Well, who are you taking then?
Torn on Deion Lewis or Leonard Fournette now because I already have Latavius Murray.
I had a pretty heavy Vikings roster after the Rams. Yeah. I was leaning on the Rams early, and they got bounced, so that hurt. But I doubled up. I had Diggs and Murray and the defense last week, so I went ahead and I grabbed myself Keenum and Thielen.
There you go.
I think they might sneak by the Eagles here and play that home game. And then I've had Gronk in since week one, so I'm no reason to turn away from him now. I grabbed Fournette and Lambeau, also a little bit of wish casting by me that the Jags can beat them. I think Fournette's a fine pick because if they get near the goal line, they're giving it to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, for playoff challenge, those touchdowns will mean a lot because I don't have a bonus right now. So
right. Yeah. Running back options aren't great. I already have Lewis in there.
So if you add, by the way, just to clarify, if you add a player this week, you get it's just their normal production.
Resets the bonuses.
But next week,
you'd get
in the Super Bowl, you would get two times. Yes, the double bonus. Okay.
So
I wish we saw James White coming, but two touchdowns. But
he's Mr. January.
Now Rex Burkhead might come back, and
I'm not messing around.
It's kind of tough going with a Patriots running back here.
I think Deion Lewis
Lewis is good. He's the one I have him in my lineup already, so I'm gonna get two times from him. But I think for receivers, I'll probably go with, I'll probably just go with the Vikings two guys.
Yeah, it's nice because Diggs and Cooks.
It's pretty concentrated between the two of them.
Yeah,
and they're both playing great. Right. Thielen made some awesome catches,
dude.
Last
he's
game.
Unbelievable.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Put those yellow gloves in the Hall of Fame.
That's
seriously.
So true.
That's so great. All right, so Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, I'm sure will be heavily invested in playoff challenge. If you're looking for running backs, I think Deion Lewis, not a bad play. Is there a running back in Philadelphia that you guys might
want for the touchdowns?
But Ajayi, I'm glad they went back to him because he was cooking for a while in that game.
He fumbled, but
he had the fumble early. He had the fumble early, but then they went back to him and he was still racking it up.
Plays were a lame duck by Nick Foles and then an Ajayi fumble like on the next play. I was like, this is not a good start. I mean, they won the game, but that was just.
I think I'm going to go with McKinnon as my Jerick McKinnon as my.
I thought about. I almost thought about going Murray and McKinnon.
How about Case Keenum as
I have him as my QB.
Oh, okay. Why not?
Beautiful.
He's got some running ability. We've seen him where he had that like seven game stretch in the regular season where he was averaging like 20 fantasy points a game.
Man, I love the Case Keenum thing.
I do too.
Another
thing to think about in playoff challenge too is you want to go against ownership percentages. Like almost probably at this point, everybody's gonna have Tom Brady in their lineup.
Yeah.
Case Keenum, and if they make it to the Super Bowl, then you get that little bonus.
It's true.
You differentiate yourself a little bit. It's a way to help.
Yeah, I mean, other than the Vikings defense, the only players I have rocking in my lineup right now. That have bonuses are four Patriots with Brady, Lewis, Gronk, and Gostkowski, and I hope I lose all those bonuses once again.
Yes,
I hope they all get thrown out of my lineup.
Oh, gosh.
When the Jags drop it on them.
What, did you drop a random Wisconsin accent?
Oh gosh,
why
for Harmon?
It's so random.
I don't know.
Okay,
because he's being mean.
I'm not being mean.
I know you're being mean to Patriots fans.
All right,
there you go.
Oh gosh, don't care.
Oh golly.
All right, let's close out your show with the round of daily daps.
Daps,
daps, daps, daps.
Daps.
Alex Gelhar, you were missing. So
we'll
start with you, pal.
Daps.
Well, I think, let's see, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to daily daps here, but I think I'm going to daily daps a restaurant in downtown L.A. that I went to and heard some good things about. We went to Mas Malo. It's a Mexican restaurant downtown.
Nice.
Haven't
very,
Mas
very
Malo?
Delicious. Mas Malo.
Oh, okay.
No, it was.
Where'd you take your fam?
We were going to go up to Santa Barbara, but then it was raining, and after the fires, there were like mudslides. Yeah, we canceled those plans and just hung out in L.A., and
terrible.
we went to some different bars, we went to some different restaurants, stayed downtown for a little bit, because like, I've never lived downtown, so we haven't explored that area quite as much.
Oh, okay.
The first thing, I just pulled up the menu for this place, the first thing I see is a four-salsa flight. I love that.
Yeah. A four salsa flight?
Can I get a flight of salsa and a flight of beer and just shoot me in the face because I'm dead from happiness?
Did you get the flight, Alex?
No, we did not get the flight.
Oh, come on.
Well, because my mom's not as huge on spicy food, yeah. So we didn't want to let her sit on the sidelines while the rest of us just gorged on salsa.
A lot of spice there.
Got it.
That's fair.
But yeah, I'll give it Daily Depths to Mas Malo, and just LA in general, such a great food scene. Because
so much good.
Every night I'd ask them, I'm like, guys, anybody have any inclination? Like, is there a type of food you want? Something that sounds good? And I was like, no. So I'm like, okay, great. Thanks for narrowing down my 2,000 different options.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, if you've never had Thai food, you're never going to want Thai food.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? If you've never had Greek food, you're never going to want, you know what I mean?
My parents did try pho for the first time.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
What'd
they
think?
My dad loved it. My mom liked it too.
Okay.
Because my dad got it with all the extra spices. Yeah. Stuff in there, and
there
I was like, yeah, you'll love pho. So it was one of the rainy days when I was still working, and they were just cruising around
food.
LA.
Oh yeah,
went and got some pho.
There it is, beautiful.
Blasted half chicken.
A blasted half.
I'm on lunch tilt now, guys.
It's not even 9 o'clock.
Can't wait to eat a booyah wrap for lunch.
Are they even open today?
Yeah, they are.
Okay, there you go. We're working on a holiday, folks, just for you guys.
Yep.
Just for you guys.
We're supposed to keep this podcast short, but actually, it's like 40 minutes right now. That's not bad.
We've had some damn good.
It's the shortest one of the year, I think.
Yeah, right? No kidding.
That's some we're damn BSing good here. Banter.
It's all, yeah, what the hell?
If the people don't like it, they can get out of my face.
I forgot to mention, if you don't know what pho is, it's a Vietnamese hot noodle soup.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so great. It's so great. Franchise, what do you got, pal?
I didn't go to the cinema.
Cinema? Oh.
But I parked my butt on my couch and watched a great movie Saturday night. I finally saw Get Out.
Oh, me too. Oh, I just saw it last week too.
Nice.
Oh,
that's great. Good.
I couldn't sleep. My mind was just like.
I completely regretted the time I saw it.
Yeah.
Because I fired up at like midnight one night, and I'm like, why did I do this to myself?
Yeah. And I didn't like, I knew it was going to be good, but like I went into it not really knowing too much about it.
Yes, me
and
too.
And at first I was like, this is so weird.
Oh, just, it's, it
like,
was
there
creepy,
were some awkward moments that made me really uncomfortable, and then it started to play out, and I was like, oh,
it's a great
oh my God, this movie.
It takes you into this weird place because it's like, you know, like all this racism. That's,
yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And then it's like, oh, you're like, oh. Anytime you see racism on screen, it's like, oh, but I don't feel great about
it.
It's
so cleverly done.
Yes.
It's not just like, you know, I'm trying to think of like
super
you're watching
subtle.
An old Western and it's that kind of racism.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's there.
Oh, yeah, it's real.
And it really makes you think.
Yes.
I know.
It's the type of stuff we like actually have to confront.
Right.
Jesus.
Like the subtle sort of
that
thing.
Movie might be my number one movie of the year. I saw it its first weekend out in a packed theater, and like so your guys mind blowing like on your couches as you watch it. Imagine that in a theater with like 400 people.
Yeah,
everybody's freaking out. People are like shouting at the screen.
Yeah,
just yelling like, "Oh my God!" Like it was so good.
James, we will have to fill these two gentlemen in on the revelation that we had about. Somebody who might be in the sunken place.
Oh, that's right.
That Marcus Grant discovered on Friday.
We'll have to fill that in.
We've really cracked.
We have cracked the code here.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I can't wait.
Who dat?
All right, let's speed through dap so I can find this out.
daps.
I will daily daps. If you're into hip hop, 2 Chainz has a remix.
Who's that?
It's a freestyle remix of Kendrick Lamar's DNA. And it's awesome.
Wait, what does that consist of? A freestyle remix?
So they, well, because they lay down the DNA track.
Yeah.
And then he freestyles on top of it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
So he freestyles over the DNA track.
Gotcha.
It's an LA Leakers video, if you want to find it on YouTube. But
Leakers.
The reason, okay, so now, the reason I think it's cool is because, first of all, there's a lot of freestyles and stuff out there. A lot of freestyles suck. This was awesome. 2 Chainz killed it. But you get to see some of the creative process happening at the beginning of the track as well, which is really interesting to see. It just kind of you get to see the gears turning and like just the idea of freestyling is unbelievable. You know, I see some of these guys do it. I'm like, what? These guys' minds work in a completely different way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So to kind of see those gears starting to move for an established artist like 2 Chainz is pretty cool. Like I saw this video with my wife yesterday, and she's like, "Oh, but he probably freestyles all the time." I'm like, "Yeah, he probably does, but it's like being on television for the very first time. You talk every day. But once that camera comes on and you know it's for reals, you know it's being recorded, something completely different changes, right? Yeah. So and even for somebody like 2 Chainz, he probably does it all the damn time. He probably freestyles over everything. But you know you're being recorded, and you know that if you stink, it's going down. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The fact that he built his confidence in this track as well. So I don't know. I just like to see the creative process. It was really, really well done.
Cool.
So 2 Chainz, LA Leakers, DNA Freestyle. So there you go. Matt Harmon, what do you got?
Yeah, so I'm going to – did I daily dab to Handmaid's Tale last week?
I think you did.
Well, I finished the season one.
Okay.
So,
hell yeah.
And season two trailer just came out this weekend too.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that yet.
Which looks like – I think Elizabeth Moss said like season two is darker if that's possible. And from the trailer, it looks like –
Oh, I got to look that up.
Sounds like they're really going to like explore the world, which I love that sort of stuff. I really get into like any sort of like dystopian or alternate reality sort of things. And that's what this is. So I'm really excited to kind of like explore outside of just the world that we did in season one. So daily daps to that for sure. And number two, I want to daily dap the next gen team for putting out these like the GIFs of the plays like from the dashboard.
Sure.
They've been really cool. We've been doing them for like big plays on like just whenever like the Stephon Diggs touchdown, obviously, but like Telvin Smith scoop and score, and that's a really fun one if you just use the hashtag go back and like look for some of them. That one's great because, and a few people pointed this out when I tweeted it out, that like you see Big Ben fumble the ball and Telvin Smith pick it up, and number 7 Ben Roethlisberger's tracking chip doesn't move an inch after the like, as soon as he fumbles that ball, like look at that, he pulls it up, there's Ben, never moves. Never moves an inch as Telvin Smith is taking this thing back.
Well, he is on the ground.
I know, but it's just hilarious to just watch it, just to watch the chip. And also you see like Yannick Ngakoue like just stroll off to the sideline right there. So they're fun. If you haven't seen them, use the hashtag and go back and find them. It's some real funny stuff. And I just – it's like the reason I want to daily dap them is because like when Michael Schaefer, the NGS – the head of like NGS or whatever, when he shared it with me, he was like – hey, what do you think about this? Like, oh, that's really cool. Like, I'll definitely tweet it out. Like, for the first one that he did, I can't remember even what play it was. But, like, somebody from the social team was like, nothing here. And I was like, what do you mean there's nothing here? People will like this. And people have been
eating them up
online. I saw
your Diggs one had hundreds of
retweets
yesterday.
Oh, all of them. Like, the only – like, I think – there's only been one that, like, didn't take off. Every one of them has like, double-digit likes or retweets or whatever because they're cool, they're innovative, and they're fun. You know which one really took off was the gif of the Falcons' final play on fourth down.
That's the rollout?
The rollout. That one really took off in a negative fashion.
What a dumb play call, by the way.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that, but, yeah, that one I've had Falcons fans just – quote tweeting it with all kinds of terrible
things. Didn't Julio Jones fall down on that play?
Yeah, but
he did.
But
yeah,
what
to eliminate, he's the only option at that point.
Right. Well, that's what I hate about that play call is it's fourth in the game and you do this rollout, so you limit yourself to a tiny sliver of the field. And sure, you have Julio Jones. I'm glad you're finally throwing it to him in the red zone. But like,
well, actually, but also I didn't hate the play call because if I'm mistaken, and you've got it in front of you, I don't know if you do, but I thought Julio Jones lined up in the slot and then made a hard, sharp cut but just fell down. And I think –
no, he was on the outside.
He was on
the
outside.
Yeah, and then he was covered, and he would have been had a better position for the jump ball, but he slipped.
They lined up Derek Coleman, their fullback, as the left ISO left wide receiver.
And then rolled out right.
And then rolled out right. I mean, yeah, and like Matt Ryan, not like a super mobile guy, not really – that was one of the things that he did struggle under with Kyle Shanahan under one was being able to roll out of pocket. Like, he's a guy that should drop back and like he's smart, scan the field.
Yeah.
I don't understand why you take away – you almost just limit him to like a fourth of the field there. It's just a very low percentage.
Collinsworth right before it too goes, all right, so this is going to be their best two-point play. The best play that they think – they have. This is going to be it.
Sark is so horrible.
Yeah, 240 retweets, 366 likes on there, and countless quote tweets of
what you
upset.
Doing? What?
There's
what you doing, Sark?
There's been some mean spirited ones. I'll say that.
When real quick before we sign off, or before Chris gets his dabs, we're mentioning Handmaid's Tale and Elizabeth Moss, and that made me think of something I saw on Twitter.com this morning. I just pulled back up.
I like that site.
Somebody said reminder that she has possibly the greatest burn on an ex in like the history of relationships. So they pulled this quote up from an interview where the writer of the interview said, "You said of your very short marriage to Fred Armisen Armisen. He's so great at doing impersonations, but the greatest impersonation he does is that of a normal person. I read that and thought, wow, that's rough, to which Moss replied, thank you.
That's great.
It's pretty savage.
There you go.
Damn. All right.
Producer Chris, what you got, bro?
You know what? We've been talking football for the last 45 minutes, but I want to keep it going. Fandom. I want to dab fandom because when Case Keenum was leading that skull chant,
that
I got chills,
cool,
before
that
the extra point.
Oh, my God.
That was cool.
And there was, I
it
think,
was great camera work, too, right?
Yeah. And the Vikings digital team, I think their head of digital, was on the field, like, in that corner of the end zone. I suggest people go check it out. Go to the Vikings Twitter handle. That's like 1 minute of just unbelievable footage, that just the crowd roaring, and he got into the mix with Diggs going through the tunnel, throwing
his
helmet.
Right.
I mean, man, that's sports.
Yeah. Sports.
Dude.
That was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Like, I can't – the roof came off that place.
Oh, also – daps to, speaking of teams and fandom and Twitter accounts, like, daps to the Jaguars Twitter, who was going in after, like they – just some petty
fun
stuff.
With
the, petty but way fun stuff with the Steelers. Like, they quote tweeted, I think, Le'Veon Bell, who's, like, excited to play the Steelers in round – basically
the Patriots.
The Patriots, and they quote tweeted him with, like, you can play them in Madden every day in the offseason.
Oh!
That was incredible.
Savage.
They replied, like – when they beat, or they tweeted out, like, I think in November, October, when the Jags had beaten all the AFC North teams, they tweeted out a Photoshop of Doug Marrone as, like, King of the North or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the Steelers team account replied with Winter is Coming GIF or whatever. And then they replied yesterday to a months old tweet, like, Winter, like, basically, Winter has come, and, like, had
the Night King GIF. Lifting up his arms.
I think about they had spliced, like, Fournette in there too or something. It's incredible.
Duvall, baby. Did you see they had, like, a little bit of a rally.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah,
that was cool.
You could hear
Jaguars fans come out.
During the broadcast, you could hear people yelling, Duval, because stadium was silent.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. When they were down a bunch, you could hear a pin drop in that place.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, man, I'm going to mute my TV right now.
Hey, man, can I just say this, though? I was disappointed in the Heinz crowd. They left early in that game.
Dude,
I didn't get it.
Privilege.
The Jags took it out of them.
I know, but still,
deflation. It was completely deflated in the first quarter. You could tell.
I know.
And Dave Damashek, we talked about
it
last
week.
But
leaving early of a playoff game, it just
the Steelers were kind of in it till the last couple minutes.
Yes, that's my point. Well, that's why I was disappointed in the Heinz crowd. I'm like, God, you can't leave early. I mean, come on.
Well, it was cold, James.
Well, okay. You know what? No, actually, you know what? That's legitimate. That's actually legit.
Love it.
All right. But still,
that sucked.
Yeah. It was.
That
it
place
was
gets weird. Dave Damashek was like, that place gets weird when the Steelers get down, and it got weird early, and it stayed weird.
Also, real quick, while we're on the topic of fandom, daily daps to local radio guys, because I just saw the Vikings.
Paul Allen.
I have to go listen to Paul Allen's, but for a while, my parents, we hadn't got to see the beach. We went to the beach one day, and it was like overcast and cold, so we went back today, and I was listening to the game on the radio through my phone. And it was on the local Steelers broadcast, and it's so fun to listen to the local guys because they don't hide their fandom at all.
No.
So they were both super highs and super lows. Like, as the Steelers came back, and then the Jags got that Tommy Bohanna touchdown, and it's like, oh. It scores. That's a dagger.
You're Ben
Tommy. That's a Tommy Bohanna. Like, both of the guys are just like, oh, and he's open. Touchdown.
Listen to Paul Allen's call.
I have to go.
Oh, my God.
That's what made me think of it, because you mentioned the Vikings thing, so I pulled up their Twitter page, and they saw, like, a radio call for the ages, and I was like, oh, Paul. Because Paul Allen is one of the best local honks.
It was great.
I mean, because even Joe Buck's voice went up 2-3 octaves.
Buck had a great call, too.
Oh, yeah. Buck had a great call. Yeah. But, I mean, just the fact that he's so steady,
and
even
neutral.
He was, like, up 2 octaves, you know what I'm saying? Because it was just so incredible.
Yeah, I was at a bar
no
for that
Dan
play,
Fouts.
And that bar, I thought we were gonna, like, break the foundation. Everybody was yelling. So
who's
loud.
In the Who's oh in the booth God. With Paul it's Allen?
I don't
Do
remember.
Know?
No,
I don't remember
I can't
either.
Think of it.
But he was going nuts too.
Ian Eagle and Dan Fouts were the most sleepy duo calling that game.
They were very strange.
It was bad. I know Chris Wessling tweeted about it, but Dan Fouts was, like, not on. Didn't care about.
That's weird.
It was kind of embarrassing.
Okay.
When you compare, like, how excited Tony Romo gets.
Oh, sure. And it's weird, too, because they're actually a terrific duo.
Yeah.
I love listening to them on the radio.
Yep.
But, yeah, it was a weird game for them, I guess.
It was.
I don't know. Maybe because it was just so damn cold.
Maybe.
They were freezing.
I wouldn't be performing if it was in the cold.
I don't know.
I would be dead.
It's possible. Anyways, right.
Should we get out of here?
Yes, absolutely.
That was a fun end.
All right, for Matt Harmon, Matt Franchise, the Wiz Kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gelhar, and, of course, producer Chris, I'm James Coe. We're out of here. We'll see you Thursday.
See you later.